This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington.
So I'm hyperventilating a little bit. If I fall over, pick me up because I've got some things to say.
Gotta love Frances McDormand. She did indeed have a lot to say at Sunday's Academy Awards as she won her second Best Actress Oscar. She thanked her director, she thanked her husband and her son, and then she did something kind of unorthodox.
If I may be so honored to have all the female nominees in every category stand with me in this room tonight. The actors, Meryl, if you do it, everybody else will, come on. The filmmakers, the producers, the directors, the writers, the cinematographer, the composers, the songwriters, the designers. Come on. Okay, look around, everybody. Look around, ladies and gentlemen. Because we all have stories to tell and projects we need financed. Don't talk to us about it at the parties tonight. Invite us into your office in a couple days, or you can come to ours, whichever suits you best, and we'll tell you all about them.
And as dozens of women were standing and cheering, Frances McDormand delivered this parting shot.
I have two words to leave with you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Inclusion rider.
That left a lot of people in the audience wondering, the heck is an inclusion rider? Well, it's an idea to improve gender equity in Hollywood. It's one of many ideas being proposed to make all kinds of workplaces fairer for women. But what are some other concrete things that actors or bankers or nurses or anyone can ask for that will help get sexual harassers out and bring more diversity in? Joining us in studio to discuss it for this segment is Emily Martin, the General Counsel and Vice President for Education and Workplace Justice at the National Women's Law Center. Emily, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
We would love to hear your questions and thoughts about this, but we're only discussing it for this one segment, so be sure to get in your comments right away. Email 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Love Frances McDormand. She makes every event more interesting and unexpected, including that comment about the inclusion rider. What exactly is an inclusion rider?
So an inclusion rider is a provision in a contract that if you are a A-list actor or somebody else who a studio really wants to be associated with the movie, you can demand. And the inclusion rider says that the project, the movie or whatever it is, will seek to meet various diversity goals. That, for example, the little parts, the people who have one or two lines, that there'll be gender and racial diversity in those parts. You can also address issues like the crew. Will there be outreach and recruitment to ensure diversity of the crew? It's a way to really create more equity in Hollywood.
Now, inclusion writers, the basic idea sounds similar to what, for example, some cities have done with contractors in terms of trying to recruit minority and disadvantaged businesses, where they'll say, hey, if you're a contractor or if we're doing this project, we want at least X percent of the contractors to be companies owned by women or people of color.
Absolutely. It's similar in a lot of ways to those project labor agreements where the owner of a big development project and unions and municipalities come together to say, let's set out some goals to make sure that the community is really benefiting from this project and that we are doing outreach and hiring women and people of color so that everybody can benefit from this work.
I love the fact that Frances McDormand said, Meryl, if you do it, everybody else will, because that kind of hit it on the head for me. Like, this sounds like the kind of thing, an inclusion writer anyway, that you can't just do if you are like Joshua Johnson, cub actor / full-time Hollywood bartender. Like, you need to be somebody with some heft to pull this off.
Yeah, she's really calling on people who have power in the conversation to commit their power to ensuring greater diversity. And that is a lesson that goes beyond Hollywood. So it also reminded me of how more and more in-house counsel for big corporations are saying to their outside law firms, give me a diverse team. I don't want just white men working on this project. Where's your diversity? It really is important to think about, if you have power in a room, how can you make that room more welcoming to women and to people of color?
Number of practical questions about this idea of an inclusion writer. Raymond Robottom writes, what if there aren't enough people of the appropriate diversity? What if there aren't enough people to fill the quota? Will they halt production or just shelve the movie? Another idea that sounds great, but unrealistic in practice. You can't force inclusion, only quotas. Emily?
So there's definitely a difference between quotas and commitments to do outreach and recruitment to ensure that you are really broadly inviting qualified people to participate. And also, if you're talking about things like roles for extras in movies, roles for people who are not the main characters in the movie, but who are the person behind the counter who's serving the main character coffee, I think you can find women and men who are qualified to do that job.
And I would also imagine, you know, for those of us who've been in more than a few contract negotiations, the idea of negotiating in good faith, I think, would also play in. So, you know, if you have this conversation and I, as the star, Joshua Johnson, movie star, say, hey, I'm not seeing enough diverse audiences, the company probably would have built in something in the front where they say, well, listen, let's build in an assessment structure. So you see the staff, if there's a problem, you give us time to fix it. And if there's still a problem, then there's some other remedy.
Yeah, I think it's really important in these sorts of agreements, whether it's in Hollywood or whether it's in these other contexts, to really set out how you plan to achieve the goal. What are the steps you're going to take to really ensure that qualified women know about the opportunity? What are the moments in which you're going to check in to see how you're doing, to set out those processes. So it's not just about hitting a number. It's about committing to a process to really make this work more diverse.
We're speaking to Emily Martin of the National Women's Law Center. We'll get to our conversation with one of the coolest women in Hollywood, Sarah Silverman, in just a moment. We'd love to hear from you on this idea of inclusion riders or other ideas to improve equity in workplaces. Email 1a@wamu.org. Now, Emily, let's talk about the Time's Up movement. The National Women's Law Center has been working with Time's Up as part of its Legal Defense Fund, this effort to provide legal support to women in Hollywood who allege sexual harassment or sexual abuse. Where does that stand right now? How many lawyers do you have? How many cases are in the works? What does that look like right now?
So the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, which the National Women's Law Center is housing and administering, is, as you say, meant to provide support to individuals who are challenging workplace sexual harassment, whether in Hollywood or elsewhere. So the fund was announced on January 1st. Since then, we have had 1,700 requests for help from women across the country.
1,700?
1,700, 98% from women, a couple percent from men, telling us stories about harassment in really every industry, up and down the income scale, from low-wage workers who are getting their hours cut back in retail stores when they complain about harassment, to women in the military who've experienced really horrific sexual assaults, to women who are telling their stories of harassment at the hands of powerful Hollywood figures. So what we have been doing for the past couple months is providing those women with information about attorneys who are members of this network participating in this effort so that they can connect with legal help. There are about 600 attorneys now who are part of this effort. And we just launched this weekend the application for funding. So we are about to move forward into actually providing funding for cases that meet priority criteria so that this money can really make a difference in allowing more women to find legal help that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to find.
Not too long ago, we had a conversation with Tom Hanks, and we talked about the Me Too movement. Here's part of what Tom Hanks told us.
Everybody is going to be operating by a different code of ethics. And don't be surprised if, you know, there's going to be new signs at the front gate of every one of the studios and every one of the production houses that says everybody entering these gates or through these doors are going to be are going to participate in these behavioral rules.
That was Tom Hanks speaking to us not too long ago. You can find the rest of our conversation online at the1a.org. Emily, what do you think of that prediction? Do you get the sense that the rules are beginning to change from the top down in an enforceable way, or is it still kind of too early?
Well, there's definitely been some really promising signs about commitment to change at the top, by policymakers, by leaders and culture makers. So I think we're in a really exciting moment where there has been a conversation that is changing people's minds about what we should accept and what we should expect at work, not just in Hollywood, but in workplaces across the country. I am really optimistic that we are going to see long-lasting change come out of that conversation.
Especially after certain cases like, say, the Weinstein Company, which finally got sold after being blocked over the concerns of sexual abuse to an organization whose board is going to be, I believe, majority female, as the way that they're structuring it. Grace tweeted, inclusion riders don't just have to do with gender and race. Inclusion riders would help get actors and professionals with disabilities included in more high-profile projects. Dragon Mama agrees. Dragon Mama tweeted, include disability diversity. 20% of the U.S. population is disabled, according to census data, yet around 99% of the rare times there is a disabled character, the actor is not disabled. Cases in point, Wonder, and The Shape of Water. We're almost out of time, Emily, but one last thing. What about hiring more women? That was also part of Frances McDormand's speech. Where do you see that going from here?
So I think that one of the things that Frances McDormand said that was really important is she really drew the connection between addressing harassment and thinking about equity and representation more broadly. When more women are in power, when more people of color, when more people with disabilities are in power, that makes a difference for the culture of a workplace, for the culture of a movie set. And so part of harassment prevention is really about opening those pipelines and thinking about how we are making sure that leadership is truly diverse.
Emily Martin is the General Counsel and Vice President for Education and Workplace Justice at the National Women's Law Center. Emily, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Coming up, Sarah Silverman has made a career out of tackling taboos, but this controversial comedian says her latest venture is more of a Mr. Rogers for adults. Can you imagine? We'll talk to her next. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.